Tri-County Contracting, worry-free roofing, siding, and windows. To sign up for a free estimate, get info on their worry-free roof tune-up or their free yearly roof inspections, or to get an instant roof quote, visit them online at tricountycontractingwi.com.
But my mom tells the story that he found out that she had bought a ticket to this show to be among the screaming people here to see these long-haired kids from the other side of the pond come in and play their rock and roll. And he said to her, $6 for a concert. You'll regret that for the rest of your life.
Live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios, this is Wisconsin's Morning News. Here's your host, Vince Petrano.
On Wisconsin's Morning News. Lots to get to in this hour. Got Adam Roberts in for Eric Bilstead one more day today. Eric's doing the afternoon show, so you hear Eric after 3 o'clock today.
So you will still get your Eric fix.
Eric? Actually, I'm sorry Eric missed this one because the art car is back in the news today. One Milwaukee alderman finally having the courage to say out loud what the rest of us have been thinking and saying all along is it's a tremendous waste of money that actually won't touch the problem. It's Alderman Lamont Westmoreland out with an extraordinary statement basically saying, yeah, this is a joke. And we spent $88,000 on the art car and we shouldn't have.
And I've spent some time in City Hall with this latest batch of Milwaukee aldermen and women. And I know he's the only one that's spoken publicly against it with the statement that he put out. I have a funny feeling, though, he's not the only one of those alder or aldermen and women's that have thoughts on it.
Don't know that we're going to get to it once again this hour. So you can text CAR to 855-616-1620. We can send you the pics. Also, everything with Dr. Ken Harris, who sounded off again on this as well, in the podcast of Wisconsin's Morning News. That's available anytime online, or you can text Vince to 855-616-1620. We'll send you the link. But don't do that right now. We got a lot of other good, interesting stuff here till 9 o'clock. Want to get to this story, and it applies to our office, but may be telling about how things work where you work. Going to spill some office tea here this morning. Going to give you a window into a controversy here at Good Karma Brands. Actually, probably controversial for me and maybe a couple other people.
I was going to say, the definition of controversial implies that multiple parties are outraged.
High controversy, multiple parties, yes. Not just because it's a pet peeve of mine, but it is something that I'm warring with some of our teammates about. Because this is going to be an issue, if not now in your workplace, maybe in the near future, if you work in an office environment. The practice that we're talking about this morning is called hoteling.
It's meant to be a shareable space that is neutral. Anyone can sit down and use it in that point in time, and it's there for the taking whenever anybody needs it.
So that's Mike Grubich. You've heard him here on the air before, president at LAK Group, which is a local business consulting firm. And I consult with Grubich from time to time on things that are happening in the workplace. And he's saying that hoteling is increasing in popularity. So in our office, many of us do not have assigned desks. So when we're done on the air here, for example, if I've got work with our marketing team or others outside the studio, outside the newsroom, we go up into our office space, which is upstairs from our studios. And there are open, or we call them flex desks. They're assigned to no one. This is no one's desk, right? And you're supposed to just kind of flop down there for the time being. You break open your laptop, you do your work, and then you pack up like a hotel, hence the term.
And we've seen this a lot in offices, as many have kind of done that juggling act of remote work. And historically, and I say historically within the last few years, it's worked well at offices that are still a pretty healthy mix of people working remote, so there aren't as many people physically in the building.
Yeah, right. And then that way you don't have to have more desks, more infrastructure, all of that.
Exactly.
There are a number of reasons also offices do it. I'll get into some of that here as we go. But basically, you don't live in this space. You don't put pictures of your family up. You don't have bobbleheads or whatever. You pack up your stuff, and then the next day you're at another desk.
Rules of engagement is that I like to use that phrase a lot. Only reserve what you need, right? If you reserve what you need. The second is don't be a disruption, right? If you're someone who tends to talk or someone who is having lots of conversations, that might be better done at your remote place versus in the office. So try to plan so that you're not that noisy neighbor. And then just respect the activity of others. Part of that respect the activity of others is if you use a space, clean it, let it be something that someone else can go into next and they feel comfortable. You're accountable for creating an environment where everyone, it's inclusive of everybody, not just you.
Mike Grubich again from LAK Group. Remember that last part. Advantages, Grubich says, some concrete, some more intangible of the latter variety. Team building, get folks from different departments maybe who sit next to each other. Maybe a little variety. That's not bad, right?
Mm-hmm.
Some are practical reasons. More PC units, just get everybody a laptop instead, right? You save space, especially for hybrid workplaces. You don't need to lease as much square footage then. You know, if a third of your workforce works from home at any given time, to your point earlier, Adam, now you only need a few desks that can be shared, et cetera. Okay, fine.
Seems very reasonable, I would say.
Why were you laughing at me back there when they mentioned noisy neighbors? Greg Pancake Hill produces the program.
I wasn't laughing.
Almost fell out of his chair when noisy neighbors were mentioned.
No, because, well, you've called yourself out for being whistling guy, and you're the same guy to whistle a tune and then also say, why am I whistling?
Yes, I annoy even myself.
So there it is.
So I can be a noisy neighbor.
A little drummer guy, too. I like that.
So here's the problem. Okay, all of that is well and good, and there are practical reasons and intangible reasons for doing this. Here's the problem. We have squatters.
Uh-oh.
Various squatters have now, without regard for the earlier stated rules, put all their crap up there. Not just one, multiple of our friends, our colleagues, our teammates, as we call them here, just claimed spots.
Hmm.
So now what's happened is, am I just the sucker? Because I'm walking around here looking for a desk with all my stuff in my backpack, which I get made fun of for. Eric made fun of me the other day. He's like, what's all in your backpack? I'm like, my desk.
For reference, his backpack is, Vince, your backpack is very full. You're like one of those kids the first day of school that's just hauling the backpack. It's like trailing down behind your butt.
But it's got all my stuff in it because I don't have a spot. I don't have a home. One of our friends here has a cactus at her desk. I mean, a cactus, man. This is not a frame or a little pencil jar. She's got plants. So she has claimed that desk.
I know we, again, if we're spilling tea, we get orchids frequently here to Good Karma Brands, and it's a madhouse dash to get those orchids. I have seen people take the orchids and put them onto a spot, and then it's just, all right.
This claimed.
I'm marking my territory, planting my orchid into this desk.
So that's my problem. I mean, I would prefer to have a space, right? I would rather it that way. I think when we moved here, I did have a desk, and then they said, we're going to do this. So now you don't have a desk, just find a spot. It's all well and good, right? Mm-hmm. I don't own the company. I don't run it. I'm happy to do whatever, you know, we need to do to have a cohesive workplace. So that's fine. It's just when everybody doesn't follow the rules, then, you know, what am I doing then?
Well, to the point of management, wouldn't you just want to raise this point to someone who can make a change if it bothers you that much, as you have claimed it does?
I don't think anybody really cares that much except
Are you
me.
Sure? Because you seem to care a
yes,
lot about this.
I'm one guy.
You are that person.
Well, the only issue I have is with when I want to go upstairs and I need to talk to somebody, I don't know where they're sitting.
Yeah, right.
I have to walk around and maybe yell out their name.
Hey, is she here? I don't know.
Hello?
She might be here. She might be there, right? All right. Well, so I always ask Grubich for solutions. Okay, Mike Grubich, president of LAK Group in Brookfield, he suggests a reservation system for flex spaces in your office.
Whether it's through your Teams or Slack or something like that, that they can see we have 8 spaces, and today Vince is going to be there, and Mike's going to be there, and Tammy's going to be there in this space. Something that's virtual that people can get visibility to it, because that will help them with planning their day. And it also, the other thing that it does is I think it helps get in front of the challenge that you have about people turning a hotel space into their space.
Right. So like a hotel, right, you have to reserve the space.
Mm-hmm.
And that works with varying degrees of success. We have that for some of our shared spaces here. If you want to reserve a conference room, right?
Right.
Then you go up, it's 10 o'clock, and you look in there, and there are people in there, and they're like, oh, do you have this room? Yeah, okay, fine.
Now, that only works as long as you actually make the reservation. Otherwise, you'll have the situation where you're right. going to check into your hotel, and the
Somebody's
previous guest has not left yet, but they were never supposed to be there because they didn't book the room.
So that's my issue, because right now we don't have hoteling. We've got squatting. We have vacant houses that people just moved into and just made their own, of little consequence in the grand scheme of things. But if this is going on at your office, interested to know your thoughts on that. 821 on Wisconsin's Morning News. Story that a lot of folks have been interested in part because we just don't have all the information yet, all the details, also because it's simply tragic. We are still waiting right now on formal charges for the young man who's accused of shooting and killing a University of Wisconsin Whitewater student just days before classes were set to begin at that Walworth County campus.
Definitely some grief happening. I mean, very sad. Very sad time. I mean, just really heartbreaking to see that happen and hear about it.
It's a student there on campus talking with TMJ4 News about starting day one, first day of classes at Whitewater on Tuesday, with this cloud that is hanging over that campus and that community. Kara Welsh is a national champion gymnast for the Warhawks and a senior business student. She was killed at an off-campus apartment on Friday night. The new information that we have is police arrested a 23-year-old by the name of Chad Richards, whom they said knew Welsh, although the nature of the relationship between the two has not yet been clarified. Police say Richards shot Welsh following an altercation. Typically, we don't name people who are accused of crimes until those formal charges have been filed. In this particular case, it's police putting the name out there. And in addition, Richards has already made a court appearance. So his name, his video, if you've seen him on the news, it's out there. And this whole we don't name people until they're charged is not it's not a legal hurdle. It's a journalistic one.
Right. We saw that with Eric Mendoza in the Prince McCree trial. Traditionally, someone who's under 18, you would not name as well. It's something you historically see. But again, he had made his appearance. It was publicly information that was available at that point.
So here's what else we know at this point. Richards was in court Tuesday. A judge, again with charges still pending, agreed to continue holding Richards on $1 million bond. Police have recommended several charges. So this is what happens is police investigate the crimes. They give their reports to the district attorney's office. The DA's office ultimately has that charging decision, but police usually recommend. This is what we see here in our investigation. These are the charges we recommend. DA can do whatever he or she wants. But in this case, first degree intentional homicide is among the recommended charges. In something that I can't say I've seen before personally, definitely rare at a first hearing, Kara Welsh's family spoke. Her sister addressed the court.
I've heard many people talk about Kara's sports accolades, which do deserve to be celebrated, but she had so much more to give to the world aside from gymnastics. There was nothing that Kara couldn't do.
It was hard to hear there because she was fighting back tears, but she said there's nothing Kara couldn't do. The family is from Plainfield, Illinois. Kara was just 21 years old, and she was going to be a senior this year. So once those charges are filed, which could come at any time, you have a criminal complaint in which we expect to have much greater detail about how and maybe why this happened. Of little consequence to the Welsh family this morning. They've lost a sister, a daughter. But there obviously is a lot more detail that we are expecting to learn in the coming days.
And if anyone is wondering about as far as any sort of bond in this case, will this guy be posting bail at all? It's $1 million is the posted bond in this case, so likely not going anywhere.
Judge cited flight risk as one of the reasons for the high bond, also the seriousness of the charges. Chad Richards is due back in court at the end of the week. 8:29 on Wisconsin's Morning News. Wisconsin's Morning News on a Wednesday morning. Adam Roberts is in for Eric today. Eric's doing the afternoon show, so he'll be on Wisconsin's afternoon news.
Fear not.
What were you? Was that a thing on the domes you were listening in on yesterday?
Yes, it was
a committee hearing.
In part, though, the Milwaukee County Parks and Culture Committee,
okay, right.
One of our many illustrious committees on one of our city or county board bodies, was talking about a litany of different topics, including, as you mentioned, Vince, the domes.
Okay, did we fix it yet?
No, they are still before our very eyes in the same position they've been in for the last few years, which is crumbling. We, of course, had a piece fall off about 8 years ago. And since then, the question has been, what are we going to do, when and how? And we once again have a new proposal put forth on what to do with these domes. Now, you may recall last year, the county basically said, look, we need a quick kick in the can on this. We need finally some solution. If we're going to tear them down, then we're going to tear them down. If we're going to rebuild them, okay, fine, but how much is this going to set us back? And at the time, we got a number of proposals ranging from about $11 million that would be to just tear the whole thing down and start from scratch with a flat piece of land at Mitchell Park, ranging up to the most expensive option, which would be reimagining. We use that term a lot, I think, when it comes to businesses and buildings specifically. Well, that is what the new proposal that was discussed on Tuesday is. It's a reimagining of the dome to the tune of $133.4 million. Now, the leader of this project, Friends of the Domes, they've been involved with this for quite some time. It's Krista Beal Diefenbach is the executive director, and she laid out during the meeting what makes this proposal different. If I can play the cut for you right here.
It looks to the county for less than 30% of the plan's costs. It removes the challenge permanently from the county's list of obligations, and it is a win in terms of county's goal to become the healthiest county in the state.
So that second point, I think, was the most interesting one. It eliminates the domes as county financial responsibility, which, according to this plan, after a $30 million investment in the first phase of two for this, then philanthropic efforts and tax credits would fund the second phase, and it would be off the county coffers, and they wouldn't have to pay for that second phase, which is admittedly the cheaper of the two, which is just to help build a new conservatory and, I believe, a courtyard.
I think that's really interesting in that if you look at long-term sustainability, painful and as difficult as some of these conversations are because we grew up with these iconic attractions, they're just not what they were anymore. People are doing other things with their money. The money is not there in city and county budgets to support this. You're seeing this throughout the arts community. You know, Performing Arts Center is struggling for extra money. It has infrastructure costs. Also in this very meeting, right, they were talking about Villa Terrace, right?
And Charles Alice, yeah.
Yeah, so some of these institutions that were mainstays of our childhood and our parents' childhood, they will continue to struggle when there's not money in these city and county budgets to support them. There's not going to be more money in those budgets. So if you have an out for the county, okay, one time help us save this, then it's no longer your obligation. I think that's interesting.
And it seemed to perk the ears of the supervisors at that meeting, that particular mention there. Now, they did not actually vote on this, which is the next question. Okay, did you actually take action on this?
Okay, you'll be listening in another meeting a year from now, and we'll be doing the same
And you'll
thing,
be asking that same question.
Yes.
What were you doing over there? Well, we're doing a domes meeting again, Vince.
All right, interesting new proposal. 8:42 on Wisconsin's Morning News. You can play along with us. I'm going to give you a date. It's today's date, 1964. So 60 years ago today, this happened in Milwaukee.
Okay.
Crowds of people showed up at the airport. Thousands lined the streets, hoping just for a glimpse. I'm going to play you an interview that aired on WTMJ-TV 60 years ago with some young ladies who were really excited about what was about to happen. And from the context, you may guess, if you haven't already, the anniversary we mark today.
When they come in, I suppose that you're going to be letting out one of those loud yells.
Of course.
Why?
Of course. Because I like them.
Why the yelling, though?
Well, to show how much we like them.
Mm-hmm. Couldn't you just applaud or whistle?
No.
No, you got to yell.
Yeah, got to yell.
Couldn't you just applaud or whistle?
Let me see. Is it people waiting to see the Packers off right to go to an international game?
No. Much larger crowds for this.
Okay.
You haven't figured it out yet. It's the Beatles.
Ah.
Their one and only concert in Milwaukee. It was at the arena. Sold out event. People were staking out the route. They staked out the airport. They were there at the hotel, location of which had leaked in the media.
You know, 1,000 kids outside the Coach House Inn on 19th and Wisconsin. We didn't announce where they were staying. We still don't, I don't know, it's word of mouth or, you know, somebody must have known somebody at the Coach House and knew that they were staying there, but they were there, and they tried to get in, and they tried to get souvenirs, cigarette butts, whatever they could get. So it was something that I haven't seen it since, and I don't know if it'll ever happen. You know, that was a time that was, it was a lot different than it is today.
Maybe some of you of our senior audience would recognize even still his voice. That is Bob Berry, DJ for WOKY, the hottest rock and roll DJ in town at the time.
Been in the stacks of wax.
Right. So Eric Bilstead looked him up as we came up on this anniversary. Eric's hosting the afternoon show today, so he'll probably have more on this. But Derek caught up with him. Bob was given the opportunity to MC the Beatles concert, which he said from time to time that's how these concerts went in the early 60s. The hot DJ in town was invited to serve as MC and introduce all the acts.
And you still see that sometimes today. I remember in La Crosse when I used to work for radio, some of my coworkers would take the stage and rile the crowd up before a big show.
So that was Bob's job in this one. What he remembers is when it was time for the Beatles to take the stage, they weren't there yet.
So when it came time for me to introduce the Beatles, they were nowhere in sight. So Jackie DeShannon finished her last song. She was the last warm-up act. And the road manager said, okay, get up there and do something because they're not here yet. And so Eddie introduced me, and I went up. And I had to ad-lib for 15 minutes. And every time I'd mention one of their names or the Beatles, there was tremendous screaming. So thank God for that, because that took a little time. So finally they arrived, and all I said was, the Beatles. And I got off stage, and I sat next to the stage, and I couldn't hear what they were singing. I mean, it was that intense. The screaming was just constant. Every once in a while it would die down just a little bit, and you could catch what song they were singing.
Yeah. So apparently the screaming thing must have been new with the Beatles. They Beatles fans invented it, right? Or something. Well, but everybody kept talking about it.
Yeah, I mean, you saw, if you've watched old videos of performers on like a TV show or something in the 50s, there's some audible noise depending on who it is. I'm sure Buddy Holly brought a pretty big crowd too. But yeah, it took it to a whole nother stratosphere with the Beatles all the way until they stopped touring.
I would play you some sound from the show because WTMJ has a lot of this archived, but you really can't hear anything. I was looking through some of the old video. It's like virtually unusable. So funny aside too, Bob shared with Eric, and again, think of this. At the time, rock and roll DJ Bob Berry at WOKY 1964 was a big deal in Milwaukee. Mm-hmm. Maybe probably bigger than the Fab Four, as they were just getting started, right?
At least around here.
Right. Your big city DJs, these guys were a big deal. Mm-hmm. They decided what music made the air. They were the ones who were with the people listening. You know, it was a really important job. And so this guy's a big deal. So the tour called and asked him to MC this show in Milwaukee for the Beatles.
I said, how much does it pay? He said, we're not paying any of our disc jockeys in any of the cities in the United States. And I said, well, I think I'll take a pass.
Beatles, nah. So it's Bob's telling
us. I don't work for free.
He took that call with the station's music director in the room at the time, who fortunately talked him into calling the guy back.
Well, he wanted me to MC the Beatles, and she said, what? And you turned him down? She said, look at this, and she opened the publications, all the radio publications, Billboard and Cashbox, and said, look at how huge they are in Europe, and this is going to be phenomenal. You call them back and tell them you'll do it.
So he did, obviously, and quite a scene here in Milwaukee. The Beatles actually did give a news conference prior to the show as well, got huge coverage. My mom was at that show.
Really?
I've seen the ticket stub. And the legendary story in our family was my grandfather was a very smart man, John Shimmons. But my mom tells the story that he found out that she had bought a ticket to this show to be among the screaming people here to see these long-haired kids from the other side of the pond come in and play their rock and roll. And he said to her, $6 for a concert. You'll regret that for the rest of your life.
Wow.
So back to Berry real quick. Bob Berry, DJ at WOKY, gets an exclusive interview the next day with the Beatles at the Coach House following their performance. And again, Bob, big deal at the time, but he ended up in a picture with the Beatles.
Forever known after that day as Beatle Bob, is that right?
Right. You know, the newspaper tagged me the fifth Beatle. And of course, all of the MCs around the country were called the fifth Beatle because they were on stage with them. I wish I could have been the fourth Beatle. You know, John, Paul, George, and Bob. You know, I know it doesn't have that ring, but that Ringo.
Yeah, that would have been nice, though.
Great interview with Eric and Beatle Bob, Bob Berry of WOKY. 60 years ago today, the Beatles in Milwaukee. I've never been much of a gambler. WTMJ forecast, sponsored by Dave Drake Camp Heating, where your comfort is their family's tradition. High of 78 degrees today under mostly sunny skies. Clear skies overnight. Low temperatures in the mid to upper 50s, maybe low 60s if you're close to Lake Michigan. And then chance for some rain tomorrow afternoon and evening with a high of 85 degrees. Right now at 69 in Milwaukee. I will note your Green Bay Packers are airborne. Lifted off from Austin Straubel Airport in Green Bay about 7:15 this morning on their way to Sao Paulo, Brazil. 11-hour flight.
And they're welcoming them in Brazil. I just saw there was a mural painted up on a building. Jordan Love and Jalen Hurts on the side of a building in Sao Paulo. Dozens, I'm sure, will gather to root for and cheer for the artists of that mural. You can text WATCH to 855-616-1620 to get a look at Jordan Love going up on a building in Brazil.
Game is Friday night, 7:15 kick. WTMJ's Political Power Hour is up next.